Dolphins fall to the Raiders in Vegas. Hollywood, Zach Krantz. Adam Beasley is with us now as well from Pro Football Network. Beasley, we got a lot of Dolphins stuff to get to here today. First things first, though, Zach and I, we've been debating this all morning here. Siciliano or Hansen? Who's your choice for red zone viewing? Now, listen, most people don't have the choice.
But, Bees, before you even answer that, I want to just tell you this. I didn't realize that there were two different red zones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the first time in my NFL career I've had a chance to watch it.
Right.
Because I'm usually at Dolphins games. Right. And, you know, Siciliano's a Syracuse guy, so I'm not going to go against him.
Right, of course.
But I really have only watched Hansen because I don't have DirecTV.
Right. I had no idea that there was a second one on there. And my dad, for the first time in like existence, I got him playing a little bit of fantasy football in a charity league for the DCC. And what I did was I introduced him to the Red Zone channel while he's in a fantasy football league, and he can't, like, handle himself now. Beforehand, it was just a little too much for him. Like, all right, let's just watch Dolphins or let's just watch the Giant game. I can't watch all this. Now he can't get enough of it. But I'm still, right now, at 8:07 a.m., shocked that there are two different red zones and Scott Hansen has competition with Andrew Siciliano. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it is strange. You wonder if the market could support both, but they've both been around for a
while.
They
do,
so
right.
I guess so. You know, I enjoy it in small dosages, but I like sitting down and watching a game and seeing it unfold and watching the strategy. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like a, you know, it's like a sugar high when you.
It's worse than that.
I love it, man.
Yeah,
I like, especially when the Dolphins have a 4 o'clock game. I watched just Red Zone yesterday. I couldn't put one game on.
Yep. I had to do that early.
Just Red Zone for me. That's the way to go. Adam, we're gonna take a bunch of phone calls here as well today. So we got a bunch of people who want to jump in, but I do want to get your take first. I think Zach and I are basically on the same page with this one here. You came out saying this morning the Dolphins are back to where they've been for the better part of the last 20 years, and that's being mediocre. They're not bad. They're not good. They're just somewhere in the middle. Quarterback play continues to still be an issue here, and your options basically at the quarterback position are this, Adam, and you know maybe there's another option that I'm missing, but you wait for Tua to come back, which is going to be in 2 weeks from your next game, so he's going to miss the next two. You roll with Jacoby Brissett, or you go and you go and trade for Deshaun Watson, which I've basically said that you can't do because of all the baggage that comes with bringing Deshaun Watson here. I'm curious your opinion because I think at the end of the day, it all comes back to the quarterback position here for the Dolphins, and you want to point to one common theme as to why they have struggled over the last two decades. It's got to be the quarterback play. Where do you go from here, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, if I had that answer, I'd be an NFL GM. I mean, it's got to be just soul sucking for Dolphins fans this morning, and I think last week was worse because few had high expectations of them going into Vegas playing a really good team. By the way, that offense is fantastic, and they get enough defensive stops to make it work, and beating them with their backup quarterback, and that's fair. But I mean, 35-0, not being competitive as a measuring stick against one of the two or three best teams in the AFC in the third year of your rebuild, it was just a cold blast of reality. And I don't think anyone was surprised by the result yesterday. And, certainly the Dolphins made it interesting and they may have, broken some hearts late, and we can get into the 4th-and-2 decision of kicking a field goal instead of going for it on the road against a better team. We can talk about all that, but I think the Dolphins are who they are. They've been outgained by like 800, 900 yards through three games, which is completely bananas. I mean, they are, and let's have a reality check here for a second, guys. They weren't that good last year. They were fun last year. They won games last year, but they weren't fundamentally that good. Because particularly after they made the quarterback switch.
Right.
I mean, when Fitzy was rolling, that offense was pretty good. But when they made the change and they went with Tua, they got no consistency on offense. And the defense, while certainly they had, 29 turnovers or whatever it was last year, on a down-in, down-in basis, they weren't that great. They were good situationally, very good in the red zone, got off the field in third downs when they needed to and had a bunch of picks. But you looked at them, and they were a team that was primed for regression. And I wrote this all offseason that the only way that they were going to take a step forward and maybe even tread water in 2021 was for Tua to just to go nuts, to really take that leap forward, because you can't count on 10 picks from Xavien Howard again, even though they're still turning the ball over. I mean, they've got that streak continues. They got a pick six yesterday. The defense did its part. I mean, you hold that offense to 25 points, and it's not a great day at the office for the defense, but it's not a bad one either, because they're really, really good. The Raiders are. They're just the Dolphins just are not equipped offensively to compete at a high level in the 2021 NFL. And part of it's the quarterback, but I think part of it's the coaching as well. I think the Dolphins need to take a long look at what they're doing schematically and why it hasn't worked.
All right, so I got to ask you this, and we're kind of sitting down now at a desk and looking at the big picture. What is this team better right now today than they were the day that Brian Flores took over as head coach?
Oh, I mean, they hadn't blown up the roster then,
right?
And certainly Ryan Tannehill has played better than any quarterback that's been
okay.
On their
so
roster.
You know what? You're right about that. So let me I'm going to even fast forward. The day that they came out with, We are rebuilding, we're retooling, we're trading away Tunsil, we're trading away Minka Fitzpatrick. This is a 2 to 3 year plan. Are they better today than they were that day when they traded off their players?
Of course, okay. Because you looked at that roster, and every week they were claiming four guys off the waiver wire.
Right.
So yes, the roster is obviously better now than it was when they blew it up. But that doesn't matter if they can't make those pieces work.
Correct.
I mean, what are they doing? Jalen Waddle's averaging like 6 yards a catch.
I wish he was. It was only 5.8.
Yeah. Right. I mean, what is the thinking there? Why are you turning him into a glorified running back when he is one of the fastest dudes in the NFL? And they're not. And they took a bunch of deep shots yesterday, to their credit, late, which they needed to do. But it was to Will Fuller, who, I mean, he hadn't played those were his first snaps in almost a year, in 9 months. He didn't participate at all in training camp, didn't participate at all in preseason, missed the first week because of suspension, missed the second week because of personal problems, and he's the one that you're airing out to with the game on the line, as opposed to Jalen Waddle, who's been there every single day, and honestly is probably a better player. There are a lot of decisions that they've made over the last 3 weeks that make you just scratch your head. They have, what is it now? They played 12 quarters, 13 quarters, including the overtime, and they've scored how many offensive points? So they have 28 yesterday. So that, but seven was a defensive touchdown. So they had 21 and 17. So they have 38 offensive points in 13 quarters. That is just brutal. Mm.
Wow. All right, Adam, we're getting a lot of texts that are coming in here. We can read some of those. We'll also take some calls. So let's jump on the phones here, because, Zach, we have some people that have been holding in very, very patiently here. Let's go. I believe this is Ben. Let's go to Ben. You're up next. Ben, you there with us?
Hello?
Yep.
Hey, Ben.
You're on.
Oh, hey. No, I mean, I love both the teams, right? The U and the Dolphins. First, the Dolphins, the Canes, I believe what you say, that we have to pack up the stadium. I hate knowing that FSU is 0-4, or what are they? They're like 0-4 right now, right? Or 0-3 or something like that.
0-3, I believe. Right. They're 0. They got 0-0, an 0-0, like 0 in front of their record. I think it's 3, though.
Yeah.
Whoever the hell they're going to play next, that stadium's going to be packed at Doak. You know that. And I hate that their fan base shows up to the games when we here only show up for 2 games out of the year, which was, I don't even know who the hell we're going to show up for. I went to that Bama game. And before that, I went to the North Carolina game last year where we got blown out. And I hate seeing that, because my uncle always goes to me, man, Ben, you know, I never had a loss until like 2 or 3 years after, because he started going to the games back in, you know, the 90s. My dad, too. My dad was going to the games back in the 90s. So I feel like the players, man, there's a change that needs to happen, and I hate thinking, well, we have to lose for that change to happen. I hate thinking like that. I hate seeing the kids lose, you know? I hate seeing my family disappointed and like, damn, we went from where the hell they were, because they went to the national championship, my family. They went to that game, and for them to go to these games today, it's like, I feel for them. But at the same time, I feel like the kids don't have respect. They don't show it. They might have the respect for the players that came before them, for the colors that they wear, but they don't show it on the field, and I kind of feel that way. Now, the Finns, let me tell you something, and I don't know why it took, like, for the seventh caller to say that the stupid pass in the end zone was stupid. It took, like, the seventh caller to say that. I'm like, man, that pass, everything went downhill from there. You had a good chance. You had a good opportunity in that game to run away with it. I mean, 14-0, you get the ball back, whatever. And then that pass, and I saw it clearly. I don't know if it's because I've seen Rhett Lashley run that play so much that now I see it and it frustrates me. But I saw that play clearly before they hacked the ball. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe we're going to do this right here, right now. And it's, I don't know, man. It's just a love that I have for both teams, but I hate seeing them both struggle. But I do think the Dolphins are in a better position right now than the Hurricanes are. And, yeah.
I appreciate the call.
Adam Beasley, your thoughts on the, the play call.
Our NFL expert, right, Adam Beasley, right here. Beasley, that was the worst call in the history of football. No, I'm asking, like, seriously, was that the worst play you've ever seen in a football game? Because it's right up there.
I'm excited to hear. I think Godsey's talking tomorrow. I'd be excited to hear him explain that.
Right, right. Because the thought process.
That ought to be
interesting. I was racking my brain when it was going on, and I'm all for throwing the ball out of the end zone. I am. I think it's a good way to get chunk yards, and the defense thinks you have a 6'4 quarterback who's just going to lunge forward and try to get out of the end zone.
That's right. What I would have
done. Right, the obvious.
I would have done that three times and punted.
Right.
Well, I mean, up 14-0.
I'm cowardly.
It's not even still, but if you were to throw the ball, that's great. But throwing the ball laterally in the end zone.
5 yards backwards. Like, what are you thinking?
with no blocking at all. Where is the blocking?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing, is that they were just, Waddle was out there on an island, and they crushed him. So, yeah, I
would appreciate some honesty from the coordinators, by the way, when they speak about that play.
I
would just come up to the podium and just be like, listen, we really effed that one up. Like,
Adam,
the most shocking thing
all week be if Godsey comes tomorrow and speaks and goes, you know what, I bleeped that call up. Like, that would be the most shocking thing I've heard in a while.
The most shocking thing is if you would have said, no, that was a Studersville call.
Right. He just throws the other guy.
Yeah, it wasn't
listen,
me.
We've been switching off play calling all game, and that was his call to put, you know, play. Yeah, he called that one. I don't know what I was going to do there. Yeah, you know what? In all honesty, I kind of agreed with Hollywood a little bit here. I would have been perfectly fine with three runs right up the middle by Malcolm Brown just to give him 3 or 4 yards and maybe punt that ball, maybe break one and get 7 or 8 yards.
I'm too weak to even hand the ball off.
I would have handed the ball off and been fine.
You had so much momentum.
A 5-yard bubble screen backwards in the end zone, like Beasley said, with no blocker out there. You're still on 1-1, except you're giving your wide receiver nothing. Nothing out there. I mean, come on.
Well, yes, that was an awful call. But how about the, you know, the goal line situation they had that they only scored late in the game because Jacoby Brissett made a great move on a linebacker?
Right, right.
I mean, talk about Malcolm Brown. If I see another Malcolm Brown wildcat play, I'm going to lose my mind. Right. I mean, twice the goal line, they go Malcolm Brown, and it nets 0 yards. And then was a third down, Jacoby was a keeper as well. Was that what it was?
Yes.
And then fourth down, I think he was trying to throw, and there was nothing there. And
yeah.
He moved.
He, like, bootlegged out to
the
right.
I love that play, by the way. Right. He moves in slow motion. It really is fun to watch. He moves like Paul Pierce.
Right. He's at full speed, and it still looks like they're showing a replay in slow motion. But, yeah, I couldn't believe he made it in the end zone. I thought there was going to be at least three defenders that hit him at that point. He made it in, which was truly amazing. You see even Waddle on the side of the on the right side of the replay, like jumping up and down because he couldn't believe he actually got in there. I just think the play calling, man. You have two offensive coordinators, not just one. Yet the play calling looks like there's no one calling the plays.
They have entering overtime. They are averaging like 3.9 yards of play.
Oh.
And that is hard to do in the NFL. That's hard to do just if you run the ball on every down.
Yes.
3.9 yards of play. But they have the ability to throw. And, you know, again, these guys spend literally 80 hours preparing for Sunday. Like, they were at the office, I'm sure, when they landed last night. Early this morning.
Right.
I'm sure they went straight to the office and they started work on the Indianapolis Colts. They have a million times more context and information than any of us have combined. Totally get that. But common sense needs to apply at some point. And if teams know that the Dolphins have no confidence in their ability to throw the ball deep. They have none. Maybe it's because of the offensive line, and we need to get into Austin Jackson for a second because I think they need to give some serious thought to sitting him down.
Well, we can definitely talk about the offensive line, Adam, and I think we do need to address that, but we do have to hit a break first. So we will get right back to this conversation. If you're on hold, hang in there. We will get to your calls. We have plenty of texts rolling in as well, 305-567 0560 is the number. Hollywood, Zach, and Adam Beasley with you here on a Monday morning.
I want to tell you about your South Florida Chevy dealers, man. Why not? You know why? Because these are the best overall products, starting with the SUV family they've ever had. 2021 has been a great year, starting with the big boy SUVs. Those new Tahoes and Suburbans got a brand new look that everybody loves, sporty, kind of a sporty look. But more than that is they've added more space onto their big guys. So we're saying to the big families, we want you to be even more comfortable, whether it's just about getting away, whether it's taking kids to sports practice with their leagues, being able to take more kids with you. But really, it's all about being comfortable and getting a great deal at your South Florida Chevy dealers. And, man, if the big guys are too much for you, let me tell you about the midsize 2021 Traverse. Again, spacious enough to accommodate the big family, doesn't compromise any of the style. And our smaller SUV, the Equinox SUV, again, plenty of style, plenty of substance. I know you're going to love it. If you like it smaller, easier to get around, I get it. But, boy, we still have some great-looking SUVs. Chevy Blazer, the Trailblazers, they're on fire. One of the reasons, because they got great deals on them, man. Something, if you're looking for a first car, a first SUV, we got some great looks for you. Very affordable for the first child turning 16, 17. Want to get something you can afford every month? South Florida Chevy dealers got you covered. Silverado truck, strong, durable, and we got lots of them, which means we got great deals behind them. So spend a little bit of time at your South Florida Chevy dealers. We've got convenient locations all over the place. Dade, Broward, even Monroe County. Find new roads and fall in love and check out the new products at your South Florida Chevy dealer.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Fourth down and eight. Here's the ball game. Brissett takes the snap, back to throw. Looking, throws, and it's incomplete. No, it's caught by Waddle. What a catch. He took it away from a defender.
Parker on that catch.
Oh, Parker over Casey Hayward.
Wow. That is one heck of a catch to go down and get that one.
Dolphins fall to the Raiders in Vegas over the weekend. They are 1-2 on the season. The Miami Hurricanes beat Central Connecticut State University 69-0. Hollywood, Zach Krantz, Adam Beasley is here with us as well. Beasley, I start you off with this question. A texter says, Greer should be fired before he is allowed to make any more decisions. Your thoughts on Chris Greer are what at this point? With the fact that Justin Herbert is, I don't know if we want to call him elite yet, but he looked really good yesterday against the Chiefs. It has to be tied to him. It just does. And listen, Jalen Waddle, by the way, I don't know if they're just misusing him or what, but Jamar Chase looks really good as well. So you got to throw that in there. And clearly they have not been able to address the offensive line. I feel like I'm piling on right now. But Beasley, your thoughts on the work that Chris Greer has done?
Not good. I mean, he was given the total blank slate, or the blank canvas to paint the masterpiece that he wanted to paint. And he was given all the cap space he could ever want. He was given all the draft picks, the high premium draft picks he could ever want. And now here we are in year three, and we're treading water, if not backsliding. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an indictment on that entire personnel department. I don't think Brian Flores should escape all culpability, because I was talking to a source last night who told me, no, this isn't all Greer. Flores, he does, by and large, what the head coach wants him to do. So if Flores is telling him, yeah, Austin Jackson is that left tackle that we need, yeah, go get Noah Igbinoghene, a guy who, you know, a lot of scouting services had as a third-round pick in the first round, go get him. If Flo is driving this train, he shouldn't escape all responsibility for it either. But no, I mean it's bad. It's bad, and I agree that I don't think Chris would do this because he's a good man, he's an honorable man, but sometimes when GMs feel this pinch, they make panic moves. And they make moves that are in their best interest and not in the organization's best interest.
Right.
And I don't. There's nothing Chris has ever done in his history that suggests he would do that. But I would say this: if I'm Steve Ross and they come to me with an idea of some massive move, I have veto power. It's not. Not at this point. Well, I'm not. You know, you do whatever you want, and I trust you. I am sure that there is on some level some concern in Steve Ross's mind about the people he's empowered and the job they've done.
All right, so let's get back to what we were talking about right before the break. Austin Jackson, a first-round pick for the Miami Dolphins 2 years ago, played at left tackle since basically he got to this team, and he does not look good right now. I'm not breaking down every single play. I haven't done Baldy's breakdowns on everything that Austin Jackson has done. I'm just doing it by the eye test, but my eye test says he's failing right now.
Yeah, I mean, that Bills game was incredible.
Oh,
I mean, Epinesa made him look like Epinesa was in the NFL and Austin Jackson was
school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a stark reality check for the Dolphins and their offensive line. I don't want to pile on Austin here because I think we kind of know that it's trending very hard towards bust territory. But he's one of many big concerns. And, I mean, it's not like Eichenberg yesterday looked great at right tackle.
Right, good point.
I mean, he wasn't fantastic either. They had some real, real I mean, Jacoby Brissett hasn't been the quarterback the entire season. He's already been sacked 6 times. I mean, that's a big number for, 6 or 7 quarters,
yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
He's been. He's been on the field. So it's not just one guy. When you have an offensive line that's a liability, it certainly does affect what Georgia guys can call. There's no doubt about that. It affects how much confidence the quarterback has in going through his progressions, which is an important part. I mean, these guys, you can have all the speed in the world, but if your quarterback doesn't have time to see them, let alone throw it to them, it's pointless. So, but yes, I do think getting back to the broader conversation, because I don't want to pick on Austin Jackson because we kind of know what he is at this point. And for him to be a middle of the road solid offensive lineman would be a huge improvement. And if he can get to that by the end of the season, then he showed real progress. But just the entire philosophy, when they took over in 2019, Chris Greer said, we're going to spend this year rebuilding the trenches.
Right.
And they went out and they got Christian Wilkins in the first round. and they got Michael Dieter in the third round. And to be honest, Dieter hasn't been the weak link.
No, that's so scary,
far.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, he has not been the weak link so far. But those aren't impact players. They used a second-round pick on Josh Rosen. We can talk about that another day. But then you fast-forward a year, and then they really go all in the offensive line. And they take Jackson in the first round. They take Hunt in the second round. And they take, was it Solomon Kindley in the fourth round?
Right.
Then you know, then they've had a bunch of late-round guys, too, but those are lottery tickets, so I'm not going to crush them for that. And then you get to this year, and Eichenberg's in the second round again. And there are other... maybe a running back or somebody else you might be able to use that.
You trade up to get Eichenberg, too. That's a difference also.
Correct, right. Correct. And so I think if you're Steve Ross, you look at this and you say, you know, nobody bats 1,000. In the NFL, if you're batting 600 in the draft, you're a Hall of Famer. But the Dolphins, when it comes to drafting offensive linemen, I mean, the last one, really good one they drafted was Laremy Tunsil, and they traded him.
Right.
So... why am I going to continue to empower the people that have made these decisions to continue to make more decisions? What's broaden the focus just a little bit more, fellas, before I stop yapping. The name that you're going to hear again with more regularity is Deshaun Watson, and certainly the Dolphins have continued interest in Deshaun Watson at the right price. But if Brian Flores and Chris Greer start feeling the heat, maybe the right price changes.
Yep.
And maybe they're willing to give more to the Texans than they probably should. And then if you're Steve Ross, you really have to consider what the best interest of the long term of the franchise is. But
is it bringing in Deshaun Watson? Is that in the best interest of the long term of this franchise when you have a guy who's dealing with all the stuff that he's dealing with, Adam? And clearly I would think there's going to be a suspension coming his way. I just personally don't think you can entertain the idea of bringing Watson in here until all of his baggage is at the very least cleaned up from what he's going through now. Because, again, I don't think he's going to come down here and be some sort of model citizen either, because I think there's something deeper going on with Deshaun Watson. So I don't think you can entertain that. And to go back to what you're saying about Greer, I could almost – you know, give him a pass on everything except for the quarterback thing, because that was, to me, the one big part of this rebuild was that we were going to have to be terrible for a couple of years to eventually get that quarterback.
You can't give a guy a pass on an 11 top draft pick. You just can't.
But I almost would, Zach, if we had Herbert right now and he was slinging the ball like the way he is in L.A., if you had that, you'd almost be willing to, like, all right, you know what, there's holes on this team, that's fine, we'll address them. But we got our quarterback.
Yeah,
you know,
they would hit on Tua, sure.
We have
hit
our guy for the next 10, 15 years. Like they know, the Chargers know they have a guy that's going to be there for the next 10 or 15 years. And now you can spend the next few years building around him. That's okay.
But even like Beasley said, if you're not Ozzie Newsome and hitting 60% like he did in all those drafts, that's fine. But you're not even hitting like 15 or 20%
now. I just wanted a quarterback. It was all
Raekwon Davis is the best out of all those picks. Beasley, am I close on that? That of all those top picks in the last couple of rounds, the last two drafts or three drafts at this point, that Raekwon Davis is the best pick?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that he's one of them.
Right.
I don't want to write off Jalen Waddle yet.
Oh, okay, so. No. I'm even taking out this year because it's not fair through three games to really judge anyone yet. But in the first two drafts of this kind of quote-unquote rebuild, the top guy is a defensive tackle you picked out of Alabama and basically none of your first rounders.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. I mean, Christian Wilkins has been a dude. Like, he has been
a rotational
defensive tackle, and you can get those guys in the fourth round.
You're absolutely
right about that.
I mean, Raekwon Davis came in and started actually playing really well for this team before he got hurt. He would have been the best player out of that rookie class at this point, but there's just no impact guys. When you talk about first-round picks around the league, you look at impact guys, whether it's their first year or fourth year in the league and they were a first-round pick, they're doing something. No one is doing anything for this team right now as a top draft pick. And Hollywood, you might be right. If Tua was a Pro Bowler right now, if he was Justin Herbert right now, maybe there would be a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, but
he's
not.
Quarterback play down here,
is being dissected.
Yeah, if you had great quarterback play down here, I think it'd be so much easier for the fans to throw the rest of the stuff out. Speaking of the fans, let's take some calls and texts when we get back here. Adam Beasley is kind enough to join us here this morning, so if you have questions for Beasley, you can text those in or call in 305-567-0560. We will relay those over. And Zach, we're trying to find answers here on a Monday morning. As the
good
Dolphins,
luck.
Yeah, the Dolphins are in a situation they have found themselves in for a long time, and that is mediocrity. They are right there in the middle once again. We'll try to figure this thing out when we come back. Hollywood, Zach Krantz, Adam Beasley here.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
With you on a Monday morning.
You're pretty swift and easy here so far.
Get 49 points on before half. I'll take it.
Van Dyke will get the snaps. Miami has scored 13 points this year in the second quarter. Came in with only 9 points in the first quarter. Van Dyke sets up a screen.
Here we go.
Harris cuts to the right side. He's got the 40, 45. Harris near side midfield. He's at the 40. Going to try it out. Run him. He's at the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Cameron Harris takes it all the way home for a Miami touchdown. Flags are down in the end zone.
A little celebration.
83 yards for Cameron Harris.
Cameron Harris there is part of that 69-0 win for the Hurricanes over the weekend. Miami, the University of Miami, gets a win. The Miami Dolphins did not, as they went to Vegas and fell in overtime in a wild ball game out there in Sin City.
I appreciate Dan Day trying to make the football fan happy down here, right?
Hollywood, Zach Krantz, and Adam Beasley here with you. If
it's
you're wondering who the
voices
are, right, Zach, just you read me something during the break there,
right.
Beasley. You got to hear this from Peter King. This is what he had to say about the state of the Dolphins right now.
Right. This is his number three on his, I guess, 10 things I think. It says, I think the pressure on Tua to come back and play well once his fractured ribs are healed will be immense and intense. Tua had a couple of ticky-tack injuries last year, then got pulled for a performance week 16 against the Raiders, then played poorly in the last game of the season at Buffalo, entered the season with pressure to prove he deserved to be the Dolphins' long-term quarterback. He was okay in the week one win versus the Pats, then got his broken ribs in the first quarter, week two against Buffalo. Now he'll miss at least three games on IR before returning, and parentheses Miami hopes, in week six against Jacksonville. So he'll miss a minimum 15 of the first 20 quarters this year. Say he comes back for the Jacksonville game, Miami has five games in a 26-game span. Jacksonville, Atlanta, Buffalo, Houston, Baltimore. That's not a killer slate with the impatience of owner Stephen Ross to get his long-term quarterback and the fact that Tua hasn't proven in any way that it's him. That five-game, 26-game stretch has to be the runway to stake his claim for this job. He says, one last note on the Tua story. It's absurd that we're talking about a quarterback having to prove himself by midway through his second season. Totally absurd, but that's the business the NFL is now. The impatience of quarterback is fairly overwhelming, but it exists. I read that, Adam, and I don't think he could have hit the nail more on the head for what's going on with Tua and what's going to be going on with Tua in this next, 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one factor in all this is Steve Ross has owned this team since 2009, and he has not won a single playoff game.
Ugh,
yikes.
And that's hard to do in the National
right.
Football League. I mean, You luck into wins in the playoffs. You catch lightning in a bottle and you get a good matchup in the wild card round and you end up in the divisional round. I mean, it happens to almost every team, and the Dolphins it hasn't. They've been to the playoffs twice or once, I guess, since he's been owner. It's 2016.
Right.
And they've had two winning seasons, and last year was one of them. So
Oof.
The guy's 81 years old, fellas. I mean, He has a lot of...
It's not because he hasn't tried, right, Adam? Like, the guy, I mean, I don't know what more Stephen Ross can do. I mean, he...
Hire the right people,
yeah,
I think,
but he has tried. I mean, you can't say that he doesn't try, because he certainly has tried to bring in every right football person he can, right? Like, he's hired the hot names, he's built the facilities, he's spent the money, he's gotten the players. Like, I don't fault Stephen Ross for all of this. It wasn't, you know... I don't know whose choice Tua was. I guess I shouldn't say that. But, Adam, I just don't fault Stephen Ross for what's going on here. And I know fans are looking for someone to blame here today. But I just think he's done everything in his power to try to make this thing work. And it just hasn't for him.
Well, one thing to consider is that absentee is not the right word, but he is an absent owner. And teams that have absent owners... They tend not to have a hands-on approach on all levels of the football team, and they just let people run the show, and they pop in from New York for the games. And I think there is, you know, whatever happens with this franchise, the next owner needs to be more hands-on with the team that he runs, because
what more do you want the owner to do? Like, the organization is set up in a way where you have, I think the head coach has a lot of input on your personnel, and you have a GM. What more do you need the owner to do?
Well,
like, what more can Steve, in your eyes, are you think Stephen Ross is an owner? What more can he do in your opinion?
So in your mind, then the owner has no, it's not at all his fault that they draft a quarterback who might be a bust. Like, it's like he didn't ask the right questions. He didn't push the right
buttons
to make sure.
Assuming that Stephen Ross did not select Tua, which I know there's a lot of stuff out there, Adam. I don't know what's true and what's not true anymore. I have to assume that it was Chris Greer and Brian Flores who decided Tua was the guy and not Ross. So
Hollywood,
decided Tua was our guy and said, this is who you have to pick, that's another story. But I don't believe be the case.
If this was the first time that he empowered people to make decisions and they made the wrong decisions, you could just chalk it up. Okay, it's a one-off. He's made how many coaching hires now? Joe Philbin, Adam Gase, Brian Flores. How many GMs has he been through now? Jeff Ireland, Dennis Hickey, Mike Tannenbaum, Chris Greer. At some point, the owner has to take some heat for the people that he empowered to make the decisions. And I think that's absolutely on Stephen Ross.
But you say he's an absent owner. I don't know what more you would want from him. Like, what do you want him down here making football decisions? I don't know what more you would want from him. I think that Chris Greer was competent to make these decisions. I feel like that was kind of what people thought, right? Like, you wanted to give Chris a shot. He got his shot. It hasn't gone well. But Adam, I don't think that Stephen Ross should shoulder a lot of the blame for this. That's just my opinion.
Okay, well, we have a difference of opinion on this, because obviously. I think at the end of the day, the owner is the one who sets the entire tone for the franchise.
He does make the hires for the franchise. He does, and he has made some questionable ones, or at least brought the wrong people up to par. I think more than the head coaching, it's been the GM thing too. For him, by putting the wrong people in place to make the final decisions. I know that Flores is obviously in the conversation or in the room while the final decision is being made, but at the end of the day, there's only one person that signs that slip, that sheet of paper. It's Chris Greer when they make the final decision. So
I just like the way Steve Ross operates, man. He picks these guys, and maybe they have been the wrong picks, Adam. Maybe you're right about
that. Well, they have been. A lot of them have.
You take these guys and you empower them to make the right football decisions, and he kind of stays out of the way and doesn't meddle. And he's, you know, I like that. I hate the situation they got in Dallas with Jerry Jones. I mean, that thing's a mess. Where he's speaking, you know, after every game, and right while the coach
before
is speaking,
the
coach, and you know, you got to deal with that. I don't like
situation. But those aren't the only two options, though. I mean, those are the two extremes. There is a happy medium. I mean, I think Steve Bisciotti has owned the Baltimore Ravens for, I guess, 20 years now. It's been a long time since he's been the owner of the Baltimore Ravens. And you don't know his name because he's not one of these guys that are like Jerry Jones that demands the microphone. But he's at that facility every single day. And there is a level of competence and professionalism and attention to detail that he has that makes that franchise as good as it is. And I'm not saying that it has to be exactly like that, but it needs to be more like that for however this thing is going to run going forward.
All right, we got to take a break here. Good discussion going on as the Dolphins are they're in mediocre world once again here, Zach. We're right in the middle, right in the middle. So
stuck in the middle.
That's stuck in the middle. Yeah. Play that song here. Right. All right, we're going to take a quick pause here. Brian Monroe, who co-hosts the pregame show for the Miami Hurricanes, is going to join me next. He's my co-host on the pregame show, so we'll talk to him. We'll talk a little Canes football. We'll talk a little college football, too, as well. We'll go around college football with him. Adam Beasley is here as well. Zach Krantz is here. Hollywood, that's me. We will take a pause. More to come here on WQAM.